What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Road to Revolution podcast, my journey with Linkin Park. My name is Billy, and this week I'm going to try something a little bit different. If you've listened to the past 3 weeks, you'll know that it's usually just me hanging out by myself, talking about the shows, but I wanted to try having someone to bounce the show off of, because it's easy to kind of get a little sidetracked and lose focus of the main story if there's no one to kind of wrangle me in. So I have my friend Chris here today.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
Good. Good. So this will be interesting because, as far as I know, Chris has never seen Linkin Park.
No, I had never seen Linkin Park live.
All right. Well, so that should definitely make for an interesting discussion, just because your point of view will be unique to the show.
Yeah, and it's not like I dislike Linkin Park. In fact, they're one of my favorite bands. I am one of those people that I definitely prefer Hybrid Theory and Meteora to the rest of their stuff, but there's a lot of stuff post that that I really enjoy as well.
Which is totally fair. And that's actually good that you're... You know, the style of theirs that you favor is more of their old stuff, because the concert that I'm going to talk about today is from the Hybrid Theory era of shows, which is the 2000 to 2002 touring cycle, and which we've talked about on the first three episodes so far. Today's show is from 2001 on the Ozfest tour. It was the second and last show of the tour. It was at the PNC Bank Art Center in Holmdel, New Jersey. And the lineup was fairly similar to the show they played in New York 2 days prior to this, which was the one we tackled in episode 3. So it had Marilyn Manson and Slipknot, Papa Roach, Disturbed, Linkin Park, Mudvayne. But in addition to those, you had Black Sabbath headlining the main stage. You had the Union Underground, you had Taproot, Nonpoint, Systematic, all these bands that were like a perfect snapshot of that time period of music, where it was nu metal and rap metal and this crazy mix of theatrics with Slipknot and Mudvayne, and then, you know, the kind of stereotypical angry, angsty white male of the late 90s, early 2000s. But that made for an interesting environment for Linkin Park to play on, just because they didn't fit in, but yet they did. They blended a lot of different aspects into their music that you're like, yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. But then you listen to a song like In the End and you think, well, would that fly with the Ozfest audience? Like, Ozfest was predominantly a older, you know, long hair, you know, just older white male, you know, that audience.
Almost like the tail end of like the Woodstock crowd.
Kind of. You think kind of like a...
Very anti-establishment, very rebellious.
Yeah, yeah. A bit more angry than the Woodstock group would be. But it was definitely a unique crowd. Like, you didn't get that crowd at every show, but it being, you know, I was 14 when this show happened, so it was definitely new to me. It was the biggest show I'd ever been to, easily, in terms of venue size and number of bands. Before that, the biggest number of bands I'd seen was 6, and that was the show from last episode. So having 20 plus bands on 3 stages was crazy to me, especially for, I think we paid $40 or $50, and that was a great value. Like, other tours, I think when I saw that show at Jones Beach, I want to say it was like $70 to see them there, which is a lot of money for 6 bands when you could pay $40 or $50 a few days later. But at that smaller show, you did have them playing more songs. Which, speaking of, let's bring us into the set list for this show. Very similar to the previous shows, given that they still only have the first album. So a lot of repetition, but not in a bad way. I mean, this was the prime time to see those songs because it's all they had, so they were playing the hell out of them. They opened with With You once again. Then they went into one, Runaway, then Papercut, Points of Authority, By Myself. And then, shockingly, they paired Crawling and In the End together, which at Ozzfest is a bold move considering they're more on the lighter side, especially on that album.
Right.
But then they finish strong. They go right into A Place for My Head, which gets the Ozzfest crowd going nuts. And then they close once again with One Step Closer. So it was a great set, but you know, a few things missing from the show a few days prior. No Forgotten, no High Voltage. So
how was the crowd different at Ozzfest compared to a couple days earlier? In terms of like how they were received.
At Ozzfest, it was a little bit different because at the Jones Beach show, a lot of people were specifically there for Linkin Park. You know, with it being six bands, you had a much smaller pool of fans. So, and it was a lot of crossover. You know, if they were there for Linkin Park, they'd be there for Papa Roach and Slipknot too. And there was a lot of that. At Ozzfest, it's all over the place because you had so many different bands. Like Crazy Town was on the tour that year, which nobody wanted them to be there because nobody really liked them. Black Label Society was there, which is kind of weird because Zakk Wylde, that was his band, but he was also the guitarist for Ozzy, not for Black Sabbath, but for Ozzy. So he was on that tour like almost every year. And fans of his kind of music, like fans of like Zakk Wylde and Black Label Society, they're not the type of fans that are like, oh, I love Crazy Town and I love Linkin Park and Papa Roach. So you have these older metal fans that would fit way more in at, you know, a Judas Priest show or a Megadeth show. So
compare this to like a Warped Tour. Would this be like, oh, I showed up to see these five bands at Warped and there's also the rest in terms of the bands? Is this similar, except a little bit more coarse in terms of fan demographic then?
Yes and no. With Ozzfest, you had a better chance of seeing all the bands you wanted because at most there were three stages. Usually there was only two.
Okay.
And the second stage would run most of the day, and then that would lead up to the main stage. So there was very little overlap. Like when I think Mudvayne was the headliner for the second stage, so when they were done, you can go over to the main stage and Crazy Town would be on, or Black Label Society would just be starting. So there was enough overlap where you could definitely make both if you wanted to.
Right.
Whereas Warped Tour, you know, they've had, seven, like eight,
six,
ten
stages at once, yeah. And they're always all going.
Right. And they're random, too.
Right.
Like, the schedule would change every day, where Ozzfest was pretty set. The second stage, like, would you say the undercard?
Right.
Would change a lot, you know. Systematic might open the second stage on the first day, but then they might play second to last the next day. There was
so as opposed to like a Warped Tour where it's like, okay, I'm gonna go watch All Time Low because there's a band I've never heard of on this stage over here. If I'm a Black Sabbath fan, there's a much higher likelihood that I'm gonna have to stand through Linkin Park or Mudvayne.
Oh yeah, absolutely. With Ozzfest, it's there are definite headliners.
Got it.
Whereas Warped Tour, you were playing 30 or 40 minutes, and that was it.
Right.
Whereas Ozzfest, I think Black Sabbath might have played an hour and a half, maybe an hour and 45 minutes.
So how long is that whole show then?
Oh, man. I want to say gates opened at 10 in the morning.
What time did Linkin Park go on?
I want to say they were probably about 5:30 or 6:30 p.m.
And having seen the majority of the bands the day before, did you stay afterwards?
No, yeah. I stayed through the whole show, especially because I'd never seen Black Sabbath.
Okay.
And at the time, it was not known if Black Sabbath would ever go on tour again, which now we know they will, and Ozzy will continue to tour for a long time. I actually think he's doing his farewell tour this year.
Again?
Yeah. It's called the No More Tours Tour. he has a song called an album, I think, called No More Tears. So that's the joke.
But oh, okay.
This is the No More Tours Tour 2, I think. So take that with a grain of salt. You know, I saw Kiss on their farewell tour in 2000. They still play shows now.
Well, they don't do tours anymore. They do a collection of shows.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anything that'll get Gene Simmons paid.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, at Ozzfest, there were definite headliners, and the bands like Black Sabbath, I didn't know if I'd ever get a chance to see. So we definitely stayed.
Okay.
And, you know, plus I'm not going to turn up, pass up the opportunity to see Slipknot or Disturbed or Papa Roach again. Like at that rate, I hadn't been to a lot of shows.
Right.
So I wanted to see these bands as much as humanly possible.
This is like me within the same season. Like I think it was springtime, seeing We the Kings at the Florida Strawberry Festival and then seeing them after a Rays game. Like
yeah.
It's one of those things, like, oh, well, I haven't seen many concerts, so I want to see him. What was maybe different about LP's show between 2 days prior and then the one you had, other than necessarily the less songs?
You could tell maybe a little they liked the off shows a little better because they were their fans. Mm-hmm. You know, those were the shows where the fans was like, okay, well, this is them and a handful of other bands, so it's a little more focused on them, and they got to play a little bit longer, so you felt like you were getting more of their show instead of them being on Ozfest,
right?
Where they can almost kind of get lost in the shuffle. I mean, luckily they didn't, you know, a lot of people were walking away from Ozfest being like, oh, they were great, and, you know, obviously they continued to blow up after that. I think what helped with that too is they made a point every day they would go down to, I think, the Streetwise booth or the FYE booth, and if you bought their album there, they would give you a wristband and you can just go meet them. Hang out and you can get your CD signed and talk to them. And it was definitely more like assembly line format. Mm-hmm. Like they're at a table and you go up and you shake their hand, they sign your CD, you move down, next guy, same thing. And then you do that until there's no more band members left and you leave.
Right.
But it's still cool because you got to meet a lot of these guys. And at that point, I'd only met Chester and Rob.
Mm-hmm.
So now, actually, no, that's a lie. I met Mike the show before this. So I'd met 3 out of the 6. So now being able to meet all of them was really cool. Plus factor in that now I have an album signed by all of them.
Right.
Like that's awesome.
How far are we away from you having a bit of a kinship with them?
We're still a ways away from that.
Okay.
This is August of 01. There's no hint of that until summer of 2004.
Got it.
Okay. That's the point where they start remembering me at the shows and you know, recognizing me and things like that. But up until July of 04, it was all just me going to the shows and just that. I met them a handful of times, but not enough or in succession enough for them to be like, hey, you're that guy.
Familiar.
Yeah.
Right.
And plus, it wasn't until summer of 04 that I was really making it a point to be as close as possible.
Right. Up until shows. This point, it was just like the thrill of going to a show.
It was that, and also kind of luck of the draw. Like, oh, with Ozfest, we got lawn seats. So, mm-hmm. And lawn at that venue is very similar to lawn at the amphitheater in Tampa.
Right.
So if you're on the lawn, you're pretty far away from the stage. So, but I didn't care. We had a good spot. We could see clearly. It was, you know, I was happy. I got to see all these bands in one day, which is unheard of to me at that point. But I was, you know, I was still young too, so I didn't have a big say in, oh, I want to get those seats, or, oh, I have the money to buy better seats. I was just happy to go to these shows. Yeah, it wasn't until a few years later that I was like, I want to drive to these other shows in other states. I want to be upfront and as close as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're still a ways away from that.
Cool.
It's interesting because recently I heard an interview with Mike where he said Ozfest wasn't his favorite tour, which makes sense because, you know, they were still catching a lot of flack because people were accusing them of being manufactured and they're not a real rock band.
And, wait, really?
Yeah, there were a lot of people that thought they were kind of made like, you know, like there was that guy Lou Pearlman who was like, he made NSYNC and he made the Backstreet Boys, and like he, you know, people were manufacturing these bands like in a studio executive room somewhere, like piecing together this perfect band. And
that's insane.
Yeah. And this, you know, people thought that for a while because there were so many people more jaded than anything else, just being like, there's no way these 23 and 24 year olds wrote this amazing album, like there's no way. And you know, not only did they did it again 2 years later.
That's incredible.
Or 3 years later.
It's incredible that, you know, I what is it? The necessity is the mother of invention.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like that because they're... Nu metal was such a really innovative thing at the time. It came out of nowhere. So to think that like it was some guy in a lab at the music studio going, oh, I know that this will be big. That just doesn't make any sense.
Well, those accusations more sound like somebody not understanding how somebody could do something. So they instantly start hating on it and saying it's fake.
Right.
You know, I hate even mentioning this, but it's like... the whole fake news thing now. It's, you know, that whole idea of you don't understand or don't know how to respond, so you just say it's fake and you try to move on.
Right.
But...
That's really interesting, though. I didn't know that there was controversy at their start. I just... Yeah. I always thought their rise was incredibly meteoric. The story that I always hear...
meteoric.
Yeah, well, fair. The story I always hear about Linkin Park is it's, I think, 1999, and they're playing for K-Rock. And K-Rock had an album preview of some kind in a Best Buy parking lot.
No, that was 2000. That was the day after I saw them in New York. That's why I didn't meet them that night.
Yeah, because they basically, K-Rock underestimated how many people were going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And Linkin Park just... They had to get the cops called on them because there were too many people showed up because they underestimated how big the band was.
Well, I mean, that was evident, too, with the second time I'd ever seen them. They were originally booked a much smaller venue. It was about a 1,000-person venue, and it sold out so quick that they eventually decided, well, we're going to move into a bigger venue. And that's the only way I got to go to that show because the first venue sold out so fast.
That's right.
But going with the whole, you know, people thinking they were manufactured and fake and all that, it got to a point where Mike, and he talks about this in a Fort Minor song, where he would only do interviews via email.
Huh.
Because he would have copies of them saved. So if someone said, you said this, he goes, well, no, here's the email. This is exactly what I said. So it got to the point where you just had to defend yourself, which is ridiculous, but... You know, they got to a point after that they just said, well, you know, we're just going to make a second, even better album. That a lot of people agree with that sentiment.
I was just about to say, do you agree with that sentiment?
I don't, but by a little bit.
Right.
Because Hybrid Theory is near perfect. I love that album so much. So much that I love on Meteora. There's just one or two songs that I like. I'm not head over heels about, but I don't dislike them in any way, shape, or form. They're just not songs that I'll sit there and go, oh, I want to listen to that one.
I think that's one of the great things about those first two albums is the fact that they had songs on them where once you got past the main hits... and you started to go deeper into the album, there would be a couple songs, and specifically, it was Points of Authority, and then, Lying From You. It was Points of Authority and Lying From You, where you listen to them, and it's like, this is actually a really good song.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you come back to it 6 months later, a year later, and you listen to it, and it's like, oh no, this is a really good song. There were multiple songs like that on both albums that you just would come back. Breaking the Habit is a big example of that. I mean, off the Collision Course album, it's the Lying From You track that I love the most.
Yeah. For me, off of Collision Course, it's the 99 Problems, One Step Closer, Points of Authority. The mashing up all those together just, I love so much.
Right, but and you actually had the ability... back in the day to listen to the original kind of mashup, right?
Yeah, the one, it wasn't even done by Linkin Park or Jay-Z. It was done, I forget the name of the guy, but it got circulation on K-Rock and I think even the hip-hop station in New York, Hot 97, and it blew up everywhere. And that was the catalyst for Collision Course.
Yeah.
MTV and Linkin Park and Jay-Z saw how big it got and they decided, hey, we're going to do this one-off concert in LA and record it, put it on DVD, and then we're going to make a six-song EP. And it was insane.
it's crazy that there really hasn't been anything since that to maybe as high of a degree of popularity and exposure.
Well, that was huge for Linkin Park because Jay-Z has been this huge icon in hip hop for the last 20 years. Mm-hmm. So the fact that, you know, at the time Linkin Park was huge, but for him to take them on and do this amazing mashup, people were like, oh man, people who are strictly hip hop heads would listen to that and go, oh, I got to listen to more of these Linkin Park guys. Right. And I have friends who hated rap and hip hop who listened to Linkin Park. They're like, oh, are those actual Jay-Z songs? I need to hear more of that.
Yeah.
Which is cool because it opened doors on both ends. I'll never forget, and I'll talk about this show later, but there was a show in New Jersey where Jay-Z came out and surprised everybody. And it was the second time ever they had played together live.
Oh,
the
wow.
first being the Collision Course concert that they filmed.
Right.
And he came out and I took a bunch of pictures with my disposable camera. And when I got them developed, the guy at Duane Reade at the photo counter, he gave me my photos. He goes, hey man, where did you see Jay-Z? And I said, oh, he popped up at the Linkin Park show last night in Jersey. He goes, what? Man, I got to listen to Linkin Park. Like, I just think that's so cool.
Just simple word of mouth like that.
Yeah, and not even word of mouth, just dude snooping on someone else's pictures. but yeah, this was a fun show. It's, I hate saying it, but it's like one of the least memorable. Like, yes, I met them, and that is amazing. And seeing them is always going to be something exciting for me. But other than that, like, the show was fine.
You
know,
right.
It's a good show. There are other good bands. But, you know, as I'll talk about in future episodes, there's a lot of exciting things that happen at future shows. You know, things start to ramp up in 2003, 2004. And then it's like this crazy ride forward after that. But I'm happy you came on this one. It's cool to kind of bounce these off of somebody because I'd actually done a first draft, I guess, of this episode a few days ago that I had some tech issues with. And just by myself, I was like 14 minutes.
Right.
So I kind of like I had someone to bounce stuff off of and talk a little bit about other things that I probably wouldn't have thought of to bring up, which is cool. So if you want to jump in on future episodes, I'm happy to have you.
Well, thanks for having me.
No, my pleasure. And thank you. All right, well, I think that's a good point to wrap things up this week. I'm going to be doing another one in the next couple of days, so you're getting two this week to make up for the lack of one last week, and that is going to be it. I, once again, thank you so much for listening to my Road to Revolution, my journey with Linkin Park. That's all. Thanks a lot, guys. Bye.